Security policies can only end one way, in martial law imposed on our cities and in the mass detention of his critics. Who will rescue us from Trump's war on America? I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, October 7, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertow and Anna Wilcox. The producer is Josh Salem, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Suzanne Potter, Simone Perez, Antonia Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in depth.
KBOO News in depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in depth. Holly Brown is one of the organizers of this past Saturday's rally against ICE and the National Guard deployment in Portland. They were arrested by ICE on Saturday. Here's their interview with KBOO's Anna Wilcox.
First, would you like to introduce yourself to our audience?
Yeah, so my name is Holly Brown. I'm a community organizer with Portland Contra Las Deportaciones. That's Portland Against Deportations in English. We're an immigrant rights organization that's fighting to end all deportations in Portland. And we've been really consistent at protesting in front of the ICE facility in the South Waterfront neighborhood.
So how long have you been protesting out there?
We've been protesting out there basically since Donald Trump was elected. That's when our group actually began.
You had a rally on Saturday, a planned rally, and I think about 400 people showed up, if I remember correctly. So what was this rally about? What were you trying to accomplish?
The rally was in response to Trump deploying the National Guard to Portland. So that was the main thing we were focused on, is saying that Portland does not want the National Guard and that we will not stand for the militarization of our streets. The other really important part about the protest was we specifically wanted to have it in front of the ICE facility, as Trump has stated that the reason he is sending in the National Guard is because of the protests at the ICE facility to try to shut them down. There were other politicians like Senator Merkley and our mayor, Keith Wilson, who basically, you know, gave the messaging to Portland that we should avoid protesting where federal agents would be, and, you know, really like kind of stay calm and don't take the bait was like the verbiage that they used. But we thought it was actually really important to take the fight to the ICE facility because we believe they are trying to repress our First Amendment right to free speech, and they're trying to keep us away from the facility with the deployment of the National Guard, and we're not going to stand for it because we have every right to protest outside of there. So it was really about the National Guard, but also, you know, about getting ICE out of Portland and retaining our right to continue to protest at that facility.
So the rally took place during the day, and one of the things that maybe seemed a little bit, well, that was unusual for me as someone who's been covering this, is that they used gas at the facility pretty soon after you arrived in front of the ICE facility. Can you talk a little bit about that or give a little bit of a description of what happened?
Yeah, to give some context, we as a group try to do kind of like daytime protests that are a little bit more accessible to most people. Because we know at night, you know, things can typically get a little bit more violent at the hands of ICE and DHS. But this rally was during the day. It was at 12 p.m. And we had a pretty, like, varied audience. There were lots of different ages. There were honestly a lot of elderly people in the crowd. But, yeah, we marched from Elizabeth Caruthers Park, which is in the South Waterfront area, to the ICE facility. And when we got there, pretty much immediately, they came out in their riot gear and started pushing us. They pepper sprayed someone like almost immediately into the protests and detained them. And they were pushing back on us and using like really excessive force and spraying a lot of chemical weapons into the air. And this was unusual for us because usually when we do have protests that are around like 400 people, they leave us alone because it's a lot of people out there, right? And it doesn't look very good if they are gassing a crowd that is of that size. So this is very unusual that they use such force, and especially that they use such force on a crowd that honestly had a lot of elderly people in it.
So at one point on Saturday, you were actually detained yourself and taken into the facility. Are you comfortable talking a little bit about that and what happened?
I was detained. I was at the front of the protest with a megaphone doing chants. And basically what happened was we watched ICE and DHS put on their gear and get ready behind the gates to come out. And usually that's what they do when they're going to try push the crowd back, which they typically do when cars are coming in and out of the facility. But they came towards us, they pushed into us and made very targeted arrests. So they immediately grabbed me, the other person that was on a megaphone, and they grabbed two members of our safety team. So they specifically grabbed all of the lead organizers of the event and pulled us back into the facility. When I was grabbed, I was thrown onto the concrete and dragged against the concrete. And then we were taken back into the facility and held there. Well, I was held there for several hours. Others were held for much longer. But yeah, it seemed to be a very targeted arrest. Like they were trying to basically stop the protest from happening by taking away its leaders.
Do you have any injuries from that experience?
I'm okay. I just am a little bit scraped up. I do have my other org members who were arrested and actually just got released yesterday are going to urgent care today because they are experiencing more serious injuries. Like some of them have pain in their ribs, big bruising on their back. People were pepper sprayed in the eyes and they weren't able to flush out their eyes quickly when they got back there. So others are worried about long-term effects from that. So I personally am okay, but other people who were arrested and detained, I think, might have more serious injuries. There were five people total that were taken to Columbia County Jail, which is very, very strange. That's about an hour outside of Portland. And they were detained until yesterday. We had three people that were let out. There's one person that we're not completely sure about their whereabouts yet. One other protester who was detained, it was actually the first person detained that day, and it was his first ever protest. He is still currently detained at the Columbia County Jail. And actually right now as we're speaking, he is hypothetically supposed to be attending an arraignment at the federal courthouse downtown. So I did want to also amplify his name. His name is, I have to look it up because I just met his wife today, but it's Jaron Anzaldúa. But he is still in detention and we are very, very concerned about him right now.
You said that people going to Columbia County Jail is unusual. So in your experience, because you've been protesting since Trump took office, so have you heard of that happening before, or are you aware of that happening in other instances?
Previously, people were taken to Multnomah County Jail, and it seems as though over the last 2 weeks, they've started to change and take people to Columbia County Jail. I have a few like theories as to why that's happening, but it is a shift in how they are approaching arrests.
And do you know about when and how people are transferred from the ICE facility to these jails? Are those some of the cars going in and out of the facility?
Yeah, they were taken in the GEO vans, which is basically those big white vans that they actually use to transport immigrants. It actually states in the conditional use permit that the city granted to the ICE facility that detainees need to be put in shackles when they're transported. So basically they're put in shackles, they're put in this van, and then they're driven to wherever their next destination is. So the people I interacted inside, to the best of my knowledge, were ICE and DHS agents. However, the FBI was in the building. So while I was in there, I heard them talking, and they were talking about the FBI wanting to come down and do interviews with some of the detainees. So the FBI was definitely there, is there still, I'm sure. But to my knowledge, the officers that were in the building with me were ICE and DHS, although some of them did not have markings on their, uniforms. So it's definitely possible there were other groups there that I don't know who they are.
So when you were taken into the ICE facility, what was it like in there?
It's honestly pretty horrible. So I didn't end up going to county jail, but the people who did go to county jail said it was better than the ICE facility. Because when you're in the ICE facility, there's like no windows. It's just like a box basically, and you feel like you're underground, which is like really harsh fluorescent lights. We were placed in these different holding cells, and inside the holding cells, there's no bedding or anything comfortable to sit on. It's just metal and concrete. And on the walls of these holding cells, there are actually posters that are encouraging people to self-deport and offering them money to self-deport. So the situation in there is pretty grim. And also the officers and the agents that were inside there were incredibly disrespectful and cruel. I was originally placed in a holding cell with one of my friends, and we were covered in gas. So we basically we had, shirts on underneath. So we took off, the shirts that we were wearing. And, I asked a agent to come over and if they could get me my shirt out of my bag that was not covered in gas. And they refused to do that unless I gave them another piece of clothing, which was very strange. And then they got upset at my friend because they were accusing her of rolling her eyes and, told her not to smile, not to laugh. And we're basically trying to control her facial expressions. And after that, they separated us and put us into two different holding cells and left her alone. And when I was placed in the other holding cell, I was placed in there with other trans people. And we had another trans person who's placed in our cell. And then they came out and took that person and put them in a cell that did not assign with their gender. So that was messed up. When we would tell them our pronouns, they were laughing at us and mocking us. They were going through our bags in front of us. They pulled out a plane ticket someone had in their bag that was from like months ago, and they accused them of flying into Portland for the protest, which was just completely not true. They live in Portland. So there were a lot of intimidation tactics. They took so many pictures of us. I didn't get the worst of it because I was actually released fairly quickly compared to others. But it was definitely a lot of intimidation tactics and basically doing things that seemed as though they were meant to degrade you and make you, not want to come back and protest again.
Were the officers inside the facility, were they still wearing face coverings?
Many of them took off their, actually, I think all of them took off their face coverings when they were inside. And they were all coughing because they're all inhaling the gas as well. But yeah, inside they did not have their face coverings on.
Did the officers give any reason of why they were kind of focusing more on some people than others?
The officers did not give any reason, but I will say I and other white members of our group were let out after just 4 hours, while the two people of color who were detained were sent to county jail, and they seemed to be much crueler to them. So, and they were questioning them on their citizenship status, which they did not question me on that. So there definitely seemed to be some profiling that was happening.
Yeah, it sounds like both racial and some gender profiling as well was happening in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
I heard from another person on the ground that I interviewed briefly that there's 60 days left to respond to the violations at the ICE facility. Is that correct?
Yeah, so what the process is now, and for context, our group has been fighting to get the permit revoked for the ICE facility because the facility operates under a conditional use permit that was granted by the city. So the city has the power to take that away. And a land use violation was issued. I don't know the exact date now, but it's got to be 15 days ago, I think, at this point, around there. So after 60 days after the land use violation is issued, the city has the ability to begin a reconsideration process for the facility, which is basically litigating whether or not the facility should still have the permit, whether or not it fits the original use that it was granted for. So we have about 45 days left until the city can begin that process. So we're going to really be putting pressure on city council and the mayor and all of their officials to ensure that they get this building out of Portland.
So Yeah, after you were released, you were interviewed by local broadcast press, but people in the crowd kept interrupting your interview, and they also were trying to interrupt the speeches at the beginning of your rally, when you were still at the park. Has that been happening over the course of the protests, or is that kind of a new update?
There were right-wing agitators that were coming up and interrupting my statements to the press. It was really just a few people. And yes, they were there at the beginning of the protest as well. That is not like new, but it is much more intense recently. You know, there have been basically right-wing agitators that have been there since the start of the protest. However, they seem to be coming out more in force now, and they also seem to be emboldened by ICE. I don't know if anyone talked to you about this, but while we were doing that protest, we saw a right-wing streamer called Katie Davis Court that was actually on the roof of the ICE facility. So ICE is literally letting in right-wing streamers and whatnot into their building to like film protesters. And yeah, there's a heavy presence of people coming out who are, you know, trying to agitate and trying to get in fights with protesters and trying to antagonize people. And yeah, I will say too, when we were detained, there was someone following us with a camera the entire time. Yeah, that seems to be new. They're coming out in like vests and filming the protesters. And it's definitely a little eerie. From the time we were like taken back behind the gate, there was a woman that was holding the phone and just like keeping it on us the entire time and filming all of our faces. Which is strange because they take our picture anyways.
Given all of this that you've experienced and given kind of like the changes and it sounds like, you know, escalations of these protests, like not the protest itself, but the response to the protests, you know, what do you have to like, is there anything you want to share with our audience or share with listeners?
Yeah, definitely what I want to share is that I think that the Trump administration is doing this, and I think that ICE is doing this because the people in Portland are gaining power, and we're really pushing back against ICE in a really effective way. So we already got that land use violation served to the facility, and then 10 days after that, right, he says that he's going to send in the National Guard. So what I want to say to people is like what we are doing is working, and he's only doing these things because he's trying to basically silence us. So we can't allow him to do that. So I basically would be like a word of encouragement for everyone to keep coming out and to keep protesting. I know that our organization is going to keep doing protests at that ICE facility and around Portland in general. And I want to just encourage people to keep coming out. We're really stronger together. The more of us are there, the safer we are. And then probably the only other thing I would want to just plug is how important it is right now to stand behind those who are facing repression. So I just want to, you know, say Jaron Anzaldúa, his name once again, and just plug that because it's someone who right now is in a serious situation for just peacefully protesting. And I hope that people really follow his case and help to ensure that his charges are dropped. Because we know that, you know, when they attack one of us, they're attacking all of us, and we have to stand with each other. So those would be the two main things that I would leave with people today.
All right. Thank you so, so, so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Thank you so much.
That was KBOO's Anna Wilcox speaking with Holly Brown, one of the organizers of this past Saturday's rally against ICE and National Guard deployment. They were charged with trespassing on federal property. You're listening to KBOO News In Depth.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm joined today by Amanda Gao, Executive Director of Bendable Therapy, to talk about a new preliminary study from the nonprofit Psilocybin Service Center that demonstrates the therapy significantly improves symptoms of depression and anxiety. Welcome to the show, Amanda.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. To start, tell me a little bit about Bendable Therapy. What all do you do there?
Yeah, so we are a mental health agency, and we also have a psilocybin wellness program. So we have kind of two sides to the agency. One is our nonprofit, and then we have the licensed service center as well.
So Bendable helped to do a study of outcomes for folks using psilocybin therapy. Tell me about that. How was that set up? What did that look like?
Yeah, so basically our study design was to describe mental health characteristics and measure the effects of psilocybin sessions on self-reported mood, anxiety, and a sense of well-being. So really looking at depression, anxiety, and overall well-being. Any of our clients that came to Bendable were offered the opportunity to participate in the study. And so 86% of people who came to Bendable chose to participate, and which was really exciting. So we had 88 people who fully completed the study protocol, and the duration was from March 2024 to April 2025. So this was an approved study by an institutional review board. And so we were really excited to be able to kind of collect data from folks, and we were super thankful that we had so many participants who were willing to donate their information to science. And we really just looked at, again, self-reported free report on depression, anxiety, and overall well-being. And then after the psilocybin session, we took, we had participants fill out the same surveys at 1 week post and at 30 days post psilocybin session as well.
What were some of the major findings?
Yeah, so it was really exciting. So we, and again, this is through the Bendable therapy model. So our program is a robust psilocybin-assisted therapy program, so which is a little bit different than maybe some other places in the state of Oregon. So we have a comprehensive preparation and integration protocol. So through this, though, is what we found is that our findings through this one specific study were on par with those that we saw in clinical trials. So there's been a lot of curiosity of, will psilocybin be as effective on mental health outcomes as it was in what we've seen in the clinical trials that were very promising and everybody was very excited. I think there's been a lot of buzz around, or at least I feel like there's been a lot of buzz around, like, okay, these clinical studies have gone really well, but will that translate to what, like, I fondly refer to as, like, in the wild? So, and again, clinical trials have very rigorous standards for acceptance. So participants are very carefully screened. There's a lot of rule outs. And so with our program, we really have a much broader and diverse group of people who came through the program, which included 47% of the study participants were on a mental health medication at the time of their psilocybin session, which it is not something that the clinical trials allowed. You would have to be completely free of your mental health medications, have done a med taper on your antidepressants or anti-anxiety meds, which for many folks is not possible. So what was really exciting was to see that at 30 days post-psilocybin session, that there was a statistically significant reduction in anxiety and depression and a statistically significant improvement in overall well-being. And again, these are self-report for these 88 participants, but that's really exciting to see that at 30 days, people are having such a dramatic shift in their anxiety and depression symptoms and an overwhelmingly increase in their overall well-being at 30 days. And again, this was with 47% of people on mental health medications at the time of dosing, and they're those folks, that cohort of folks who were on a mental health medication, did the exact same. So they also saw statistically significant improvement in depression and anxiety and overall well-being. So it was really exciting to see that the results mirrored a lot of what we've seen in clinical trials, and it translated to a more diverse population of people, like, you know, the average person who may be seeking psilocybin services for support of their mental health.
Why is it that clinical trials typically exclude people who are on other mental health medications?
Yeah, so typically the clinical trials will exclude folks who are on a mental health medication because they don't want something else interfering with the outcomes. So that would be, you know, if somebody was on a mental health medication and a psilocybin session, it's like, okay, in a clinical setting, you know, what was the factor that caused the improvement? And then also clinical trials have a uniform dosing protocol, meaning that every person in a clinical trial receives the same dosage level of psilocybin. And so for folks who are on a mental health medication, there are some people who potentially will have what's called a blunting effect. So they want to exclude those folks to, you know, to keep the study spleen, basically. So in Oregon, we have the ability to do a variable dosing protocol, which means that each person's psilocybin dose can be tailored specifically to their needs.
Are there other things that are unique about this study?
We were able to gather, you know, the demographics of folks who were coming to psilocybin sessions. So again, like these, we did not recruit anybody. These are just people who were coming to the Bendable Therapy Program. So it was exciting to see that there were like kind of the range of folks that came into Bendable. We also often provide scholarships and financial support for folks to come through Bendable. That's been, you know, part of our nonprofit mission was to help make these services accessible for folks. So we did get a more diverse population for across the board because of our unique model. More research is definitely needed. This is just a start, but it is a hopeful start. So I'm looking forward to seeing other studies that are going to be conducted in Oregon and Colorado because they now have legal psilocybin services as well. So it'll be exciting to kind of see how our study stacks up to others that are going to be taking place. But it was exciting to be the first to publish kind of this broad data. And again, it just gives us more information. And I think with psilocybin, you know, being this new tool to support mental health, we're really excited that hopefully this will encourage mental health professionals and medical professionals and individuals to have more robust dialogue around the potential of psilocybin being an effective tool for somebody's mental health goals.
Well, I understand that there are some next steps now that this data is collected. What happens now?
Yeah, so we are in the process of writing our first manuscript. So, and we hope to have that published by the end of the year. So that'll be really exciting to contribute to the body of scientific evidence around psilocybin and the efficacy in mental health. So we are currently just working on our first publication, and then we have several other publications planned over the course of 2026.
You mentioned this a little bit, but what other sorts of questions might researchers ask coming off of what Bendable was able to find in this study? Like what else might be interesting?
Well, it may be interesting to see if other models that don't have the same support as Bendable, to see how folks do in a more pared down model. Again, ours is more of a robust psilocybin assisted therapy program. So it'll be curious to see, you know, how different models throughout the state where people are accessing services, if it still compares, if the benefits are still there. So that could be a curiosity. And then I think that we just are all really curious to see, you know, bigger studies being done and other studies just to see if we're continually seeing, you know, psilocybin have this improvement on mental health.
You mentioned the comprehensive preparation and integration process. Can you tell me a little bit about what that looks like?
Yeah, so for us, when somebody comes to Bendable, typically they will sign up for one of our free consultations where we'll discuss their individual needs, goals, and interests, and then help support them to make a decision if they'd like to move forward. Then if they do choose to move forward, we have a comprehensive intake program and our intake application and intake process, and then where we use that information to match a person with the right facilitator to meet their needs. And then once they are matched with one of our trained facilitators, they will have typically around 4 prep sessions before their psilocybin dosing session. And then after their psilocybin dosing session, which is a 1-day full event, they will have what's called integration sessions. And so we have one-on-one integration, and then we have ongoing small integration groups for Bendable participants every Monday, where it's like small groups of folks who can come and get support. And the other thing that kind of makes Bendable unique is that we are all a duly licensed staff. So many of us are also mental health professionals in addition to psilocybin facilitators.
What might you hope folks at home take away from this study?
I really hope that people look at the study and think about if this may be something that would be an effective tool for them. I'm hoping that people will bring this study to their trusted mental health professionals or their doctors and have a conversation. I'm hoping that, you know, people will be compelled to call us and get more information to say, hey, maybe this might be an effective tool for me. And I really want it to spark dialogue. And I'm hoping that especially with our study having so many folks who are on a mental health medication, that it will encourage mental health providers and medical professionals to understand the model a little bit, because I think that there's a lot of worry about asking clients to discontinue mental health medications that were previously working for them to try kind of one of these new interventions. So hopefully, as people become aware that it's not necessary to come off of your mental health medications, and that we actually strongly encourage people to continue seeing their mental health professionals and their medical providers before, during, and after these sessions, so that our programs are designed to be complementary to somebody's already existing mental health program as another tool in their toolbox. So I'm hoping that this sparks a lot of conversations amongst providers and individuals to see if this might be a tool that could be helpful for them.
If our listeners are interested in knowing more, do you have any resources you'd recommend?
Yeah, so I think just visiting our website, bendabletherapy.org, is a great place to start. People can go on there and look at our research. They can like watch videos of people who have come through psilocybin sessions. They can read our bios. They can learn a little bit more in our FAQ about what psilocybin is and what it isn't. So, you know, hopefully, you know, people can get, you know, go to our website and get a lot more information. Oh, and then one thing I did forget to mention that was kind of exciting about the study is that throughout the study, we had zero adverse events take place. So not only did we see that this was very effective at treating depression and anxiety, but it also had a high safety profile. So I think when you can come through a study and have zero reportable adverse events, that hopefully that gives people a sense of safety and security and thinking about that this may be a tool that they could use.
Well, Amanda, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for your interest and for covering this. We're really excited to be able to share this information.
That was Amanda Gao, Executive Director of Bendable Therapy, speaking with me about a new preliminary study from the nonprofit Psilocybin Service Center that demonstrates that psilocybin therapy